95K GGO Des Moines Classic Rock. Jeremy Jacobs here, joining me on the line right now, Greg Prado. He is the author, Alternative for the Masses, the 90s Alt Rock Revolution and Oral History. Greg, when this one came across my desk, being the late 80s baby that I am, the 90s at heart child, to have the opportunity to talk with you about this music, I could not wait to get it. Greg, thanks for taking time to talk with us here in Des Moines.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Looking through, you know, some of the articles and the things that, you know, you discuss in this book, talking about just the cultural influence of 90s alt rock. You know, we get hung up on thinking 90s alt just grunge. There were so many different sounds that went into this movement, right?
Yes, absolutely. What was so great about 90s alternative rock, it was not just one style. The thing that I loved so much about those bands, especially in the early 90s, were it really had to do with the band sounding unique and putting their own personal, spin on things. Like, for instance, Faith No More didn't sound like Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam didn't sound like Nine Inch Nails. Nine Inch Nails didn't sound like Blind Melon. Blind Melon didn't sound like Primus. And yeah, as far as there were all these subgenres connected to alt rock, such as grunge is probably the most best known one. But then there was shoegaze, there was industrial, there was alt rap, there was Britpop, there was emo, there was pop punk, there was trip hop. There were all these great subgenres that still to this day I find myself listening to.
Oh, same. You know, this is the go-to for me. You know, you talk about all those different genres. You know, I forgot completely to include Britpop, and we've seen just Oasis finally get back together and those guys out there on tour. You know, you talk about some of these bands and just the cultural influence that not only the music had, because rock at that time kind of seemed one note, you know, with the success of 80s hair metal and all of that and the stuff coming out of California and Los Angeles specifically, like, sort of felt that one sound. And now you get into the 90s, and like you said, you've got just this, all these other sounds out there, but they all have that same kind of connection with the audience.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, what was so great about also the alternative rock movement over the early 90s is it went beyond just music. It also influenced politics, it influenced fashion, it also influenced media and TV and magazines, you know. So but again, that's also happened previous throughout the course of rock history. It happened in the 60s with the whole Beatles and also psychedelic movement, and then again in the 70s with the punk rock movement. So it's, you know, happened at certain points during rock history.
On the line with me right now, Greg Prado. He is the author of Alternative for the Masses, the 90s Alt-Rock Revolution and Oral History. Greg, look at some of the individuals that you had the opportunity to sit down and interview for this one. For one, extremely jealous, but it's a literal who's who of the era. You know, you're talking to Gavin Rossdale from Bush. You're talking to Matt Pinfield. You know, you're talking to Pixies and Moby and, you know, Fred Armisen even. The Breeders, one of my favorite bands that often doesn't get nearly as much love. Going through these interviews, stuff like that, who sort of, you know, for you was like a man, this is just, you know, sort of surreal at this time?
Well, probably the top interview for me was the great producer Steve Albini, which it's definitely bittersweet because I spoke with him and we did a nice interview, 30 minutes long. It was a great interview. He talked about producing Nirvana's In Utero and working with the Pixies and all the great bands he worked with. And then sadly, just 2 or 3 months, he died. So it was, you know, kind of sad to have this great interview. And I was really looking forward to sending him a copy of this book. And sadly, he's no longer with us. But yeah, he was great to speak to for the book. But also, I interviewed Fugazi's Ian MacKay, which was a great interview because to the best of my knowledge, he doesn't really do too many interviews about Fugazi or the history of alt rock. But he was very open to discussing everything. So he was great to speak to. Also, a surprise interview which was great was Fred Armisen, who we all know as the comedian and also actor from Portlandia and also Saturday Night Live. But a lot of people don't know, he was the drummer of a 90s alt rock band called Trenchmouth. So it was interesting to hear what he had to say as well. And then also, you're interviewing Matt Pinfield and also Kennedy from, they were both two, of course, MTV VJs. It was great to speak to them about 120 minutes and also the Alt Nation site that was very, very popular on MTV. So yeah, those are a few off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I love it. And, you know, unfortunately, like you said, the passing of Steve Albini, and it was, you know, really nice. You know, just this past year, we celebrated the anniversary of In Utero, you know, this time last year. And a lot of the interviews, and, you know, Dave Grohl sat down with Conan O'Brien and they talked with Steve and they talked with, you know, Pat and a lot of the guys that were there at the time making that album. Just hearing what went into making that album compared to what they had done previously was just fantastic. I cannot wait to dive into this book and to see what Steve had to say with you.
Yes. Yeah, no, you know, I, one thing that was great was I made it a point, I mean, not to pat myself on the back too much, but but I did make it a point to ask him, like, what microphones he used, what were his recording techniques for those albums. So, yeah, so anyone that is interested, if you're a home recording person or if you own a studio or even like a home, you know, basement studio, if you read this, it's a pretty extensive thing that Steve Albini talks about, like his production techniques and recording techniques and mic placement and all that stuff. Yeah, so that's also a bonus in the book.
No, I love that. You know, you talk about sort of that movement at the time was about, you know, what you could do on limited budgets, you know, getting into some of the basement studios and just making music for the sake of making music. It didn't have to be pretty. It didn't have to be polished. It just had to have feel to it. So it's really some cool insight that you were able to get with Steve.
Thank you. And you know what? This just popped in my head because you asked me about all the subgenres. I just thought of one that I totally forgot about. How about lo-fi?
That is, yeah, we're getting into the nitty-gritty there with some of the subgenres.
Yes, absolutely. That is a nitty-gritty type of subgenre.
Yeah, and I love, you know, I laughed when I saw the Fred Armisen because, you know, you talk about, yes, you know, Fred has been very outspoken. You know, not a lot of people knew that he was in a 90s alt-rock band, but we know of his love for it. One of my favorite SNL skits was when they got to do some stuff with Dave and the Foo Fighters on there. So very excited to see what Fred has to offer in this book as well.
Yes, he has some great stories to tell and also some unexpected insights. Yes, Fred is a great... He played it pretty straight. He wasn't like making any jokes or anything, but no, it's absolutely fascinating what he had to say. And again... It's very unique to hear his side of the story because he actually was in a touring band that was, you know, touring in a van at that time. So he talks about what it was like to actually be in an alt rock band back in the 90s.
Yeah, and I imagined, you know, that things probably weren't exactly great for alt-rock bands back in the 90s, you know, but they were living their best life out there on the road. Online with me right now, Greg Prado, the author, Alternative for the Masses, the 90s Alt-Rock Revolution and Oral History. You know, what was one of your favorite bands? If you had to say, hey, this is my favorite band from the era, who would that be for you, Greg?
Well, I don't really have just one single band. I could tell you a few if you like me to tell you a few of them.
Sure, go ahead. I'm the same way. I couldn't tell you just, you know, this one. I was talking about, right. You know, favorite songs the other day and was talking about Best of You by the Foo Fighters. And I'm like, I don't know any Foo Fighters fan that would say that's their favorite Foo song, but you get them live and in person and in together, it's everyone's favorite Foo song the moment it hits. So it's sort of the same way with these bands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because, I mean, for me... Soundgarden was always my favorite grunge band, but then I also loved Faith No More. I loved Primus. I loved the Meat Puppets. Blind Melon was definitely Blind Melon with Shannon Hoon was definitely at the top for me as well. One of my favorite albums from that era is the Blind Melon Soup album. That to me is an underrated classic that never really gets the credit it deserves. Some other bands I really liked. You know, the thing by going back and doing this book, like I was saying, you know, I rediscovered some bands that I hadn't heard in a long time, such as Grant Lee Buffalo is a great band that tends to be forgotten. The band Shudder to Think I loved. Their album Pony Express Record is a highly underrated album from the 90s that I still listen to this day. Even the Living Color Stain album is a very underrated album. That album, I think, should have been a lot bigger than it was at the time. I also loved, of course, Radiohead. You can't go wrong with the OK Computer album. That's a great album. I love the Loveless album by the band My Bloody Valentine, Jeff Buckley, Grace. And again, and I'll tell you one more. One band that I rediscovered by going back and doing research for this, the band Lush, which I loved back in the early 90s, and I hadn't listened to them in so long. And I rediscovered how much I love their 1994 album called Split is a great album.
You've given me a bunch of things that I need to go add to my Spotify playlists right now, so I'm gonna make sure that I throw a lot of these bands back in there. It has been a minute. What is maybe a quick story, something fun that fans can find in that book that you'd be willing to share with us right now?
Well, let me think. An interesting story. Well, there is an interesting story. Did you ever hear of a band from the 90s called The Frogs?
I have not, at least not at the top of my head right now.
Okay, they were kind of a obscure band, but what's interesting is they were championed by some of the biggest names like Eddie Vedder loved them, Kurt Cobain loved them. And then it turns out that Beck was a very big fan of theirs as well. And he actually sampled part of a Frog song on his hit song, Where It's At, off the classic Odelay album, which sold, you know, a lot of copies and was all over MTV. And you would assume that if you get a sample of an original song you wrote on a hit song by someone else, that you would still be getting royalties to this day. And the gentleman I interviewed from the Frogs explains in the book that was not the case at all for him, that whoever his manager was or his label or whatever just, I guess, didn't know what they were doing, and they accepted just a flat fee up front, which he said was just the equal to just like a week's paycheck at your job, and that's all that they ever saw of that. So they missed out on what, you know, really, I guess what they should have done is what the actor who played Obi-Wan Kenobi in the classic Star Wars, instead of taking money up front, he took a cut of what would happen in the future, and he became a millionaire supposedly by that. But sadly, that did not happen with the Frogs. It was just that one small payment, and then that was it for that.
That is unfortunate, too, because I know, you know, everyone out there knows Beck where it's at. You know, then mm-hmm. it's everywhere. So, yeah, that is unfortunate. Greg, book is out now, available at Amazon.com. Any other locations you want to send listeners, let them know where they can pick this up?
Yeah, I'd say just go to Amazon.com, do a search for Alternative for the Masses or Greg Prado. You'll see all my other books, too. And, yeah, this book, Alternative for the Masses, is available as hardcover, Kindle, and also as a audio version. And, yeah, you can also check out my latest writing at x.com/Greg Prado Writer. I'm always posting my latest interviews and articles there as well.
All right. Fantastic. Greg, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us here in Des Moines. I hope you have a great day, and I cannot wait to get my hands on a copy of this book.
Great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.